risking life and limb to bring you the latest in Macintosh news, information, and talk. It's the MyMac.com podcast number 87.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
And Tim and Chad here with you once again.
Risking life and limb to bring you the latest.
The reason that we started the show off that way is because we've been under tornado warnings and tornado watches for the last few hours here in southwest Michigan. In fact, between 5 and 5:30, me and two of the kids spent a half hour in the basement because the tornado sirens went off, and there's one thing I don't mess around with. It's tornado warnings.
Oh, yeah.
Those suckers go off, we go down to the basement. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a tornado in your neighborhood, it'll mess up your whole weekend. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, right now we're still under a tornado watch.
Yeah.
Which means watch out for tornadoes instead of a warning, which means there's probably one near you.
But the big nasty cell that carried the alleged tornado is well south and west east of us now.
Yeah, it could still come at any time, just like in The Wizard of Oz. So here's Chad and I risking life and limb, risking it all to do the podcast.
In a bomb shelter somewhere in Battle Creek.
Broadcasting from Berlin. Yep. Anyways, we got hopefully what's going to be a really cool interview. I don't say hopefully that the interview will be cool. Mm-hmm. I'm quite sure it will be.
Hopefully we'll make it cool.
Hopefully that we'll have a good enough connection where we can do it.
Yeah.
With bad weather, our internet connection may be spotty at best. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. Hopefully it'll go off without a hitch. The person we're going to be interviewing, hopefully, is Al Lucco. Is it Lucco?
I think so.
Yeah, that's how it's spelled, so I'm going to say it that way. Lucco Design. Mm-hmm. Why would anybody care about that?
Well, because one of the things Al does is he does the website for Steve Wozniak.
That's right, woz.org. But much more than that, I don't want to talk about just Wozniak with him, obviously.
Right.
Because he's one of these very, I think...
super talented.
Not just that, but he's probably got a lot more influence in the Mac world than he probably even realizes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got a very unique voice. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to hearing from him. And when I asked him if he'd be interested in doing the interview, he said sure, but he really didn't know what we were going to talk about because mm-hmm. I think he's a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for?
Unassuming?
Yeah. I think so. But I think I know he's very talented, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it should be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to start that interview here pretty quickly, so we don't want to get into the news quite yet. We'll do the news after our interview with Al. How about that?
That sounds good.
One of the things I did want to spend a little bit of time talking about really concerns the podcast itself. If you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, you know we have segments. We mm-hmm. have, right now, three regular segments.
Right.
We used to have Chris...
with Not Mac News.
With Not Mac News. I don't know what the status of that is right now. I know Chris has been pretty busy writing for Apple Matters, mm-hmm. and MyMac's kind of taken a back seat to that recently. So, excuse me, I don't know if he is just planning on going that route for good, mm-hmm. or he's still, he's just so busy that he has to prioritize...
Right.
And since they're paying him cash money, his priority is there.
Right.
I hope, I'm really hoping that he comes back to MyMac.com at least for the podcast, because mm-hmm. I love Not Mac News. And he did that every week, and it can be easy to come up with BS Mac News week after week after mm-hmm. week. The other segments we have, of course, is No Snooze Reviews with John Nemirovsky.
Yep. Quick Reviews with Robert Haselrig.
And, of course, the long-running, very popular Dashboard Minute with Guy Searle, who posted a follow-up to his digital Audio is Hard article.
Yeah.
Just a couple days ago. So I haven't listened to his latest, so we'll see how the audio quality is. Yeah, well, I'm going to listen to it at the same time that I put it in the GarageBand application itself. So, you know, when you guys hear it, you know, that's when Chad and I heard it for the first time as well. But here's my question to Chad and to our listeners out there. And I've already spoken to all the segment producers, if you will.
Right.
About taking those segments and creating a second podcast with them. Rather than having everything in one big, long podcast. Usually our podcasts run between anywhere from a half hour to, it can go up to an hour and a half.
It has in the past, yeah.
That's not the norm. The norm is usually between 55 to...
an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah. And that's, I don't think that's too long, but I have heard a few people say that's, I prefer it between a half hour and 45 minutes, tops. So I'm thinking, what if we moved those segments to their own show, produced them separately? I would obviously put that together, not here at this studio, but the other studio, and I would just record short intros for those.
Right.
And we'd have two shows. You know, one comes out on Thursday, the other one could come out on Monday or something. I think that's viable, but I'd like to get some feedback from our listeners if they would prefer. It would knock the length of this show down. And that would be a pretty small, short, actually not small, but a short show as well.
Right.
I doubt if it'd go 15 minutes. And it would be weekly, just like this show is. What's your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts are, I kind of like the way we're doing it right now, but I was recently reading an article from, it was some sort of group for people who do corporate training. And they talked about how more and more corporations are relying on podcasts to educate and update their sales force while they're out on the road. And they said the average podcast for those folks should probably be no more than 15 to 20 minutes. And, of course, that's when you're issuing out, you know, corporate information, goals, updates, things like that.
Right.
That's work-related. So I can understand limiting a work-related podcast to no more than 15 or 20 minutes because...
But this is an entertainment podcast.
Exactly.
I mean, we provide some news... But, you know, all said and done, this is an entertainment podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We're not trying to be, you know, the New York Times or CNN.
And we're not trying to be the most technically geeked Apple podcast out there.
You're not going to tune into this podcast to get the latest tips and tricks on how to fine-tune Photoshop. There's other websites and podcasts that do that.
Right.
I don't really want to do those. It just doesn't interest me. I don't mind listening to one like that occasionally.
But frankly, to me, they're kind of dry. And if I'm not sitting there with my Mac going through the steps, it means nothing to me.
Right. And then some of those that are very technically oriented podcasts are way too long because it's this one guy, you know, without a whole lot of pre- or post-production value in the podcast itself, i.e. no music, no breaks, no nothing. It's just the same person talking the entire time for 45 minutes in the same monotone voice, going over dry technical. I think that's boring as heck, and I don't think... there's a place for that. Some people like that. Don't get me wrong. And there's a time and a place when I actually enjoy listening to it, usually when I'm by myself because my wife would absolutely not let me listen to that. But that's just not who you and I are. I mean, to get a prime example, simply watch the latest video review that Chad and I posted online. When did I post it? On Wednesday.
Last night, yeah.
And you will see what Chad and I are really like.
HP PhotoSmart 425 Digital Studio.
Yeah, I was actually editing that myself and got to a part where it's just Chad assembling the printer and the camera for 10 minutes, and we can't show that for 10 minutes. That's just so boring.
No. Yeah.
So I sped it up to, you know, the whole thing's like a minute and a half now, that segment. Chad putting it together, so it's in fast speed, and it looked comical, so I added in this British Benny Hillish type of type of music. And as soon as I started watching, it was so funny. I called Chad up on the phone. I said, "Dude, are you doing anything right now?" He said, "No." I said, "You got to come over here. I'm editing the video." And we literally died laughing for an hour, just cracking up.
And then thought of other stupid things to throw in there.
Yeah. Then I don't know, either Chad or I went, "Need a monkey in the video." What is a video review without a monkey?
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. And Robert Hazelrig actually sent me an email saying, he was surprised to see a monkey that looked like George Bush in the video. And I said, what are you talking about? There's no monkeys. That's all George Bush in the video.
Oh, God.
We love our president. But, you know, it was fun to do, and that's the kind of thing that Chad and I enjoy. We don't... I mean, I was an IT manager for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very gadget, geek, blah, 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 oriented, but not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do on this podcast. So the question for everybody out there is, should we move the segments to a different podcast, shorten up this podcast, it would make that podcast shorter. We can actually come out with a third podcast mm-hmm. in which this podcast that we're doing right now is just you and I chatting and reading the news. Boom, that's mm-hmm. it. The second podcast would be the three segments, possibly four if Chris Siebel comes back. Mm-hmm. And then the third would be whatever interview we happen to conduct that week. So you would have three podcasts from us. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to go with it. From a money standpoint, it would help me simply because we could have more ads.
Right.
I know the listener's like, oh, yeah, that's just what we want, more frickin' ads. But the point is, these podcasts take a lot to produce and mm-hmm. a lot of money to host and serve these out to the Mac community
yep.
at large. To offset those costs, we obviously have advertising.
Yep.
And, you know, that's... we got to pay for the stuff somehow.
True.
Actually, speaking of ads, I did want to talk for just a minute before we jump to a break about Ramjet.
Yeah.
Ramjet is one of our sponsors. And, you know, they got a heck of a sale going on right now for DDR400 memory. Mm-hmm. This is the slightly older memory for PowerMac G5s, iMac G5s, the original Mac Mini, and the eMacs.
Yep.
512 DIMMs are $49 each, or 1 gigabyte for $99.
That's a good deal.
Dude, you could max out a PowerMac G5 with 4 gigabytes of RAM
mm-hmm.
for $400.
Yep.
That's, I mean, and even if you didn't want to go that route, how many people could use an extra gig of RAM in their PowerMac right now? Or
sure.
even if they've got an iMac G5,
mm-hmm.
an extra gig, $100, that's a no-brainer to me.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got less than a gigabyte of memory, or if you're at a gigabyte of memory, you really should bump it up to 2. Here's a great way of doing it pretty cheaply.
Well, I mean, prime example, we went from 1.5 to 3 on mine. And
it made all the difference.
Huge performance difference.
Yeah, not only was it more stable, it seemed faster. It was just, it makes...
Well, just even working with my office applications, it's just...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And RAM is really the most important upgrade you can make, providing you're not out of hard drive space, of course. But
yeah.
RAM is the most significant tweak you can do to your Mac to make it run faster and more stable.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be a lot more happier with it. Just check out ramjet.com, and when you order from them, let them know that mymac.com's podcast is what made you go buy.
Yeah.
That way they keep advertising with us. So let's take a quick break. We're going to look for Al on the internet and start our interview.
Listening to the Dashboard Minute, right here on the MyMac.com podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Guy Searle, and this is the Dashboard Minute. I'm hoping that my voice is coming across deep and rich after all of my audio problems. I think I have most of my issues solved, well, related to audio anyway, as my particular neuroses are not subject to debate within the confines of the Dashboard Minute. Feel free to believe as you wish about any other outstanding personality problems that I might have. I have two very cool and useful widgets to bring to your attention this week, and what better way to talk about the first one than by braving the elements outside. Okay, can you hear me? The first widget is the Hurricane Tracker widget from TravelWidget.com. What this widget does is give you the latest satellite images from the National Hurricane Center. You can choose between the Atlantic, the Gulf of Mexico, or Pacific images with various focused views and also with additional choices like water vapor, infrared, or visible images. the NOAA, or National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, supplies all the views through this widget, and the widget is supposed to also allow images from GOES, or geostationary satellite servers, but at the time I tried the widget, they had been moved, and the widget had not been updated to view them yet. Even without that, this is a very cool widget, and I highly recommend it for people that like to keep track of these storms. The Hurricane Tracker widget is a universal binary, so it works just as well with Intel Macs as it does PowerPC ones. Find this widget at Apple's Dashboard Download Center or at dashboardwidgets.com. If you don't mind, I'm going to step back inside for the rest of this segment. Ah, that's much better. The last widget for today is for people who spend a lot of time cutting and pasting images between documents, especially if you end up using the same image over and over again. It's called iClip Lite, and it's from the Creative Collective at inventive.us. This very easy-to-use widget not only allows you to save images for reuse, but also internet addresses, text, and most anything else that can be copied and pasted between documents. You don't even have to clear one to use another, as multiple clip bins are present to save as many as you wish. It has a very easy-to-use interface. Click the up arrow to save the current contents in your clipboard to a bin, and the down arrow to reload it back in again. If you don't need it anymore, click the universal no symbol between the arrows to clear it out. It's a universal binary as well, so it works great with all Macs that can run OS X 10.4. Find this widget at the author's website at inventive.us and naturally at Apple's dashboard download site or dashboardwidgets.com. Naturally, you can also find links to both of these widgets at the mymac.com podcast under the pod show notes for this episode. While I'm sure the sounds of my voice have soothed you into a state of bliss, contemplating your navel or attempting to reach nirvana, the Dashboard Minute, sadly, for this week is done. Special note, I may not have a Dashboard Minute next week as my family and I are traveling to an East Coast beach for a well-deserved week of fun in the sun. I can't tell you exactly where, as all the DBM groupies would be sure to congregate and ruin the peace and tranquility that comes from traveling with my two young sons. However, if you have a favorite widget you would like me to talk about, I can be contacted via email at dbminute@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time on the Dashboard Minute on the mymac.com podcast.
Email, this is Apple Airport Express. You're cleared for wireless takeoff from the living room.
Internet, this is Apple Airport Express. You're cleared for landing in the kitchen.
iTunes, this is Apple Airport Express. You're coming in nice and easy on our wireless runway.
Apple Airport Express from Small Dog Electronics. Wireless networking anywhere you are. Browse, email, print, even listen to music. Wireless. Go wireless now with a 12-inch iBook, Airport Express, and carry case for $11.49. Small Dog Electronics in Waitsfield and on the web at smalldog.com. Small Dog is wireless.
And thank you, Guy, and Small Dog Electronics for the sponsorship. We
and, Guy, you
it.
Sound fantastic.
Sounded great. This week in Mac News, Bill Gates to step away from Microsoft.
A report on CNN notes that Microsoft announced today that Chairman and Co-Founder Bill Gates will move out of his day-to-day role at the company effective July 2008 to spend more time working on his charitable foundation. I've decided that 2 years from today, I will reorganize my personal priorities, Gates said during a news conference, adding, I have one of the best jobs in the world. I believe with great wealth comes great responsibility, the responsibility to give back to society and to make sure those resources are given back in the best possible way to those in need, he said. Gates added, it is not a retirement, it's a reordering of my priorities.
I respect the heck out of the guy for that.
Yep.
He's always said that when he's not going to start giving away the majority of his money until he retires from Microsoft.
So we can monitor where his money's going.
And I'm glad he's not waiting till he's 80 years old to retire from Microsoft. Because, let's be honest, in a lot of people's mind, Bill Gates is Microsoft. And Microsoft is Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's probably as true nowadays as it once was, because it's such a big company.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? 2 years from now, he will not be day-to-day at Microsoft. And... Mm-hmm. I wish him the best of luck, you know. I think he's got enough money to truly make a difference in this world.
Right, and he already has. I mean, he and his wife have done quite a bit with their Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, so...
Exactly. Report on June 15th. Advice to students, pack a Mac.
A column in Business Week by Stephen H. Wildstrom today advises students to get an Apple Macintosh from going back to school. While I have been a Mac fan for years, I have never felt strongly enough to make the Mac a default recommendation, said Wildstrom. But things have changed. Mac software, both the OS X operating system and the applications such as iPhoto and GarageBand bundled with it, have gotten steadily better, while Windows seems to be stuck in a rut.
So there you go. If you're going back to school, if you're a student, get a Mac.
MacBook or MacBook Pro, either one.
June 20th, Apple releases iPhoto Update 6.0.4. Apple has posted iPhoto 6.0.4 via its software update utility and on the web. Of this 36.4 megabyte update, the company says, this update to iPhoto contains a variety of new greeting cards and postcard themes for use with Apple's printing service, including invites and thank you card designs for summer parties, weddings, birthdays, and etc. I can't tell you if it's worth the update. I haven't done it myself, but I usually like to let other people do it before I jump into the bandwagon. Yeah. And Civilization 4 for Mac shipping June 26th.
Aspyr Media today announced that Sid Meier's Civilization 4 for Mac will begin shipping on June 26th. The game is licensed from 2K Games and developed for Mac by Aspyr Studios. Sid Meier's Civilization 4 comes to life like never before in a beautifully detailed, living 3D world that expands the gameplay experience. This latest installment takes the franchise to new heights with the addition of new ways to play and win, new tools to manage and expand your civilization, all new easy-to-use mod capabilities, and various multiplayer modes and options.
It's $49.99. I'm looking forward to it. I might actually get that game.
Do you like Civilization?
I liked Civilization. I think it was 2 or 3. I don't remember which one. Liked it a lot. It was very addictive. So maybe I shouldn't buy this. Apple releases Shake 4.1 Universal and lowers the price. Apple today announced the release of Shake 4.1, the first universal version of its compositing software, and cut its price from, get this, $3,000 to, drumroll... $499 $499. Final Cut Studio editors can now take advantage of Shake for sophisticated 3D compositing, keying, image tracking, and stabilization for the price of a plug-in.
Wow.
Shake continues to be the tool of choice for major motion picture studios and leading effect houses to create award-winning visual effects, including this year's Oscar winner King Kong, Apple says. Shake 4.1 delivers significant performance gains on the new Intel-based Macs, providing artists and editors with desktop-level experience on the new MacBook Pro notebook computer.
Next, Apple in talks to offer movies at iTunes.
According to a story in Daily Variety yesterday, Apple is in talks with Hollywood studios to offer movie downloads on iTunes, notes Reuters.
Citing unnamed sources, Variety said iTunes might begin offering film downloads by the end of 2006, but currently a price on iTunes is a sticking point in negotiations. Apple's CEO, Steve Jobs, is said to want one flat price of 99 cents per movie.
No.
$9.99 per movie, whereas studio execs want a range of prices that mirrors videos and DVDs at retail stores, which generally speaking run from discount titles at a few bucks up to $19.99 or more for new releases.
I would understand offering old movies like Risky Business for, you know, $3.99.
Yeah.
And something like King Kong that just came out for
$9.99. Mm-hmm.
But not $19.99 for a downloaded movie.
Yeah.
And not unless it's going to be in HD quality, and then it's going to take you 4 years to download it.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a broadband, it's...
Well, let's be honest, those price points are really designed to drive you to buy the DVD.
There you go. Superman. Want some free stuff from Apple? They are giving away a 2.5-minute preview of the upcoming Superman film, Superman Returns. It is 12.2 megabytes in size, as far as I can remember, which is questionable at best most days. Now, this is the first time Apple has offered a free movie in iTunes. On a side note, Superman opens June 28th here in the U.S.
Yep.
Did you download it yet?
No.
It's pretty cool.
Hmm.
It made me want to see the film. Even I went, oh, that was cool.
Oh, yeah. You know what we need to do? We need to go to the IMAX and watch it there.
Yeah, that would be an experience.
Well, with the 3D glasses, got the new 3D.
Yeah, that would just give me a headache.
No, the new one, is actually, they say, is actually quite good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to check it out that way.
If you're a Mac user and you need a hosting service for your website, why would you want to host your site on anything else but a Macintosh? Anotech has been hosting the MyMac.com website for over 7 years, and we wouldn't have it any other way. Are they the cheapest web hosting company in the world? No. Do they offer the largest amount of server space of bandwidth in the world? Of course not. But with Inotech, you don't get pie-in-the-sky false promises, just the best customer service, the most popular hosting service plans, and everything running on the latest Apple Macintosh server gear. Check them out at www.inotech.com/mymac for special pricing. That's www.inno-tech.com/mymac. Inotech, the trusted web server of MyMac.com for over 7 years. That's like 49 dog years.
How much would you be prepared to spend for a set of premium in-ear headphones that are called the next best thing to live music? $50? $100? $200? $250? Well, at MyMac.com, here in Nemo's reviews you can use that won't make you snooze, we've been spending a lot of time listening to upscale, upmarket, expensive premium earphones from a company whose name is spelled ETYMOTIC, Etymotic Research. Now, I'm actually posting a written review of this entire company's products on our website at mymac.com, but I understand that there are quite a few listeners who do not read the website. Shame on you. Well, if you happen to listen to this and don't read the website, you don't need to read the website, because I'm going to tell you what you need to know about the Etymotic Research in-ear premium earphones. I recommend you spend $300. You've just spent $200 or $250 or $300 or $400 on your iPod, and you think that those white earphones, earbuds that come with the iPod, are good enough. Well, Tim has gone on at great length about how they are not good enough, and whether or not you think they're good enough or not, I urge you to consider upgrading to the Etymotic ER4 Micro Pro earphones. They're small, obviously, because they go in your ear, but they're well constructed. They come with a sensational case with filters and different fittings and different attachments. Remember, this is $300 we're talking about here, but the most amazing thing is they sound really good. I have listened to a lot of conventional and in-ear headphones for an extensive series of reviews that we're working on for the print side of our publication, you know, the website. But nothing matches the ER4 Micro Pro reference quality earphones from Etymotic Research. The music is good. They fit well. They're well constructed. Don't let the dog eat them. Don't cook them into the pizza. Don't leave them outside where they can get thrown into the swimming pool or run over by your neighbor's moped. Just try these things from some place where you could return them if you don't like them, but the sound is exceptional. I'm listening through them right now, and even I sound good through the Etymotic Research ER4 Micro Pro in-ear, top-of-the-line earphones. Thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast. This is Nemo's Reviews You Can Use That Won't Make You Snooze, unless you want to snooze listening to your earphones like I did the other night on the airplane. signing off until next week.
And we're here with Alan Luckow. Alan is the owner and operator of Luckow Design Studios, as well as also operating, well, the website for Steve Wozniak.
That's right. Hi, Al.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going real well. First, let's find out a little bit about you. What are you, who are you?
Who am I?
I know, but let's kind of explain it to the listeners out there who are going, who are they interviewing this week?
Yeah, I've been trying to find myself for a long time, so I'll do the best I can. I do. I'm kind of located right here in Santa Cruz, just outside of Silicon Valley, and I do a lot of startup work, a lot of corporate identity, logo design, websites, package design, trade show work, animation, video, you name it, UI design, and I've been doing this for about 15 years now, and I kind of rode the dot-com wave, and over the course of the time I've been here, I ended up meeting Steve Wozniak, and I've been working with him, and any company he has or any projects he comes up with, I'm always involved in that stuff. So, you know, that's kind of in a nutshell.
Yeah. Now, did you start in design pre-computers, or were you already into design and that sort of thing before the computer revolution started?
Well, I graduated in 1990, and I went to Northern Illinois University, and at that time, Macs had just started coming out, and I got my full education in school that had to the point where it had nothing to do with computers at all. It was all just straight design, and really, in many ways, I think it's sort of the best way to go, because computers have just, you know, gotten easier and easier and easier. My senior year in college, I remember seeing a Mac demonstration, and I said, oh, I got to get one of these, and I bought a Mac 2 CX for $5,000.
But that was a heck of a machine when you bought it.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah, it's holding the door open in my garage right now. But I tell you, I did so much on that thing, and you know, it opened up everything. But I was kind of lucky in a sense that I learned typography and all these things before the computer really came out and, you know, gave people these awesome powers. You know, it's just like anything. You know, it's you really got to know how to use it. Anybody can shoot a missile, you know. You just have you have to know how to aim it, and that has a lot to do with it. And I think in a sense, a lot of the kids going through school now, the focus is so much on computers that you know, they kind of lose sense as to what they're there for. They're not really there to be computer technicians, and I knew I sure wasn't, and I that's why I never went to use a PC or a Windows machine, because I didn't really want to be a programmer. You know, I wanted to use the computer for you know, creative work. And I've found, you know, over the years that pretty much if you're not using a Mac and you're a designer, you know, it doesn't say a whole lot for you. And good luck getting work, you know. It's just incredibly slow, you know.
So do you think there's too much emphasis nowadays on the computer itself and not enough on
good discipline?
Yeah, the discipline of graphic arts?
I think, to sort of rephrase it, what I'd say is that if you take a class in school and all they want to talk about is Photoshop, 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 you know, you go through school, by the time you're out of school, it's on the next version of Photoshop, or people aren't using it, or you learn some program. You know, you learn presentation design, you're using Persuasion, and you get out of school and Persuasion isn't the thing anymore, and now it's PowerPoint or it's this or it's that. You basically put your eggs in a basket and hope everything's going to be exactly as it is in school. You know, so what happens is you get out of school and all of those skills that you learn could easily be taken away from you, but the skills they can't take away from you are your hardcore design skills, the skills that follow you no matter what you do, whether you're using a computer or you're doing artwork or you're doing video or, you know, filming, all that stuff. It you know, they can't take those skills away. But, you know, if you emphasize, you know, if you go to school and you say, oh, I want to learn this program and it's what I have to know, you know, that may be true, but I've seen programs just dissolve. An example would be Adobe had actually was Aldus Persuasion years ago. It was a great, great presentation program. I've done, you know, thousands of presentations. And Persuasion in 1995 was better than PowerPoint is today.
Yet, saying something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yet, but what's everybody using? And Persuasion is gone. I mean, it's Adobe just discontinued it because they couldn't compete with, you know, Microsoft.
The Microsoft.
The Office bundle. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really, you know, and it was a better program all around. And, you know, that kind of stuff happens. So if you're gonna go into design, I would really, you know, you're going to have to learn the programs, but the programs are just getting easier and easier all the time. I mean,
yeah, ease of use doesn't necessarily turn into those who know how to design well.
Right.
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 Okay, so you graduate 1990. You take a second mortgage on your first home for a $5,000 Macintosh.
Yeah.
How long did it take to pay that Macintosh off?
Man, I was living in California for a while before I had that all that stuff. I had like a student. There was some kind of student program where you could buy that, and I bought a nice 15-inch monitor, and that was color.
Yeah. Yep. Living.
Yeah. Yeah. You were jamming.
And I asked my dad that I wanted to upgrade the computer. I said, you know, this thing only comes with 2 megabytes of RAM, and RAM is really important. And I think if I maxed it out at 8 megabytes, I'd never need to buy RAM again. That would be so much. And I needed a couple bucks to buy the RAM, and he gave me the money to buy RAM.
A couple bucks back then?
Yeah.
It was more than a couple bucks.
It was quite a few bucks. But, you know, I stuck that in there, and it got me going. I had the computer. I dragged it out to California. I designed, you know, packages. And, man, I did a whole lot on that machine. It really really served me well. And like I said, I'm still working. It's holding the door open down there.
So were you freelance right from the beginning, or did you work for a design agency?
I opened up a firm in Santa Cruz, and it was right after the Loma Prieta earthquake, and the whole downtown was all just rubble and fences and everything. So it wasn't exactly the best time to start a business. And there was a recession, and I kept it going for about a year and a half. I did it with my sister, and then I just ended up saying, this isn't working, so I ended up working at a newspaper down here, and I got a job doing all their covers, and I walked in the newspaper, and sure enough, they had a Mac 2CX, exactly the same model I had, and I tried to move them into the digital age, but they like to print everything out on paper and paste it up still, so it was called Good Times.
Yeah, it's hard to change.
Yeah,
other people. Mindsets, yeah, a mindset, especially in the publishing industry. Yes, they embraced desktop publishing, but they did it grudgingly. I mean, they didn't rush headfirst into it with open arms. That's for sure.
They looked at it like a typesetting machine, you know, and there was just a whole lot more you could do with it. And after I was there, I think I was there 2 years, and I ended up thinking I should probably go. You know, this isn't really. You know, I could get a better job. I applied at one place. It's a place called Image Group, and they hired me right there, doubled my salary, and it was like my eyes opened up, and this was right when the CD-ROM was starting to come out, these shiny little discs that were really cool, and we started doing interactive CD-ROMs, and, you know, it was really an exciting time. Everything was, you know, it was kind of advanced, and you know, we had a CD-ROM burner there. It was like bigger than a VCR, and every time you used it, you couldn't walk. You know, if the CD burner's on, don't walk over there. Don't go over there. Yeah, it's gonna skip. You know, these CDs are $25 a piece. You know,
the lights would all dim.
Whoa.
Yeah,
it's like a set from Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, it was gas powered.
had a pull motor on it.
But that was a great time, and I did a lot of fun work with that company, and over the course of that time, the web just started to come out, and a lot of guys were out there trying to make websites, and they were all looking really bad because most people had 256 color monitors, and the graphics ended up looking really crappy. But, you know, all us guys who were doing the interactive CDs, we had already figured out all these palette problems because we had to do these hybrid disks that would run on Macs and PCs and Sun machines, and we knew how to deal with the color palette, so the transition to the web was really easy for me and for a lot of the people that did what I was doing.
Well, I know, I remember that time very well myself because I was actually designing websites here in Michigan, and I remember very clearly those who could actually design a website usually weren't very good at creating graphics for that website.
Right, right.
And you can still see that actually today. People who know how to, who can actually build an MySQL and PHP website from scratch, it looks horrible because you need someone that has the design skills and you need the coders and the programmers.
Right.
And
right.
So do you know the programming as well, or do you just concentrate more on the design?
Actually, I've done both, but I generally work with a programmer. Simply because I think, you know, you're the right brained or left brained, and really, I could do code, but it's painful, and it doesn't come out very good. So why should I, you know, there's people that can do code that love to do it, and it always works great, and so I just try to combine the two worlds. A lot of times. You do have to understand a certain amount of code to know when the programmer's handing you a line. Oh, we can't do that. That involves... No, you can do that, you know. I don't know how, but I've seen it done, you know. So you have to be able to do that. But, I don't like to get too heavy into the code. I do a lot of Flash stuff now. There's a lot of action scripting in there. And I can get, you know, pretty far with that, but... you know, for the heavy duty stuff, I just hire somebody to help me. You know, it gets lonely working by yourself anyway.
Oh, I can. Yeah, absolutely. So you also do packaging, and your website says you help young companies establish an identity.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, you have a bunch of engineers that get together in a garage and they make something and it does this, and they say, "Look what we have," and if only we had some more money. So that we could, you know, make it. And, you know, you're not going to get any money if you just walk in somewhere with a paper bag and, you know, some pile full of, you know, a motherboard and something soldered onto it. It just doesn't work that way. And what I do is I make people look like a company, give them an identity, you know, working with them. Do you want to be high tech? Do you want to be earthy crunchy? Do you want to seem like you care about the environment? Do you want to seem like you don't care about the environment? I try to get a feel for what they want to project, and then I create the identity for them, you know, the logo and collateral and all the things, the website that surrounds it. And, you know, then they go out looking for money, and I do the venture capital presentation work for them, teach them how to talk to these people, show them how to make the presentations. I've done a lot of VC work, you know, having lived through this whole dot-com era, it was 50% of your job was convincing people to give you money, and it's gone from easy to hard to easy to hard.
I know that you do some packaging work still, and that you're actually on Bruce G's packaging software out there.
Oh yeah, picture me and a picture of my little girl and my cat. Yeah, I've, you know, Bruce told me, you know, just make the package. And I go, I don't have any pictures. Just put a picture of your wife on there. And so I did. And I said, oh, I got all these pictures I took in Australia. Give me those. You know, he used those and he made really interesting demos and stuff out of them. I still see these same, you know, it's like I keep seeing my vacation that I took in 2000 everywhere. You know, it's amazing. And I even saw pictures on the Apple site. They had used some of the ones that were on Bruce's thing. And I showed my wife one day. I said, look on the Apple site and look under, you know, third party for iMovie. And she did, and there's a picture of her and me.
That's got to be a little surreal.
It was weird, yeah. I'm like, I don't know how this happened. I have a little story about working with Bruce. And, you know, I can't really say this is exactly for sure how it went, but this is what I think. When we were working on this plugin called Slick Motion, it's sort of something where you're you know, it's the Ken Burns effect, essentially.
Right.
Well, there was no Ken Burns effect. Nobody named anything Ken Burns effect. And I didn't know what to call it. So I told, I started, and I just watched that Jazz thing came out. And I said, you know, like the Ken Burns thing where he's always doesn't have any footage and he just puts a bunch of pictures in and pans across them. You know, I said the Ken Burns thing, you know. And so me and Bruce were referring to it like that. And Bruce was constantly going over to Apple because he's an old Apple guy and he knows everybody there and everybody loves him. And, you know, he would talk about this stuff and he would just call it whatever we were calling it. And then I see Apple starting to do stuff like this and they start calling it Ken Burns effect. And I think, well, that's funny. You know, I remember making that up, you know. And maybe, you know, it could be that maybe we both made it up, you know. Two people invented the radio, whatever. But it sure is weird because Bruce was always going into the iMovie, you know, section of Apple and talking to all the engineers. And he was using all these terms. And, you know, a little part of me likes to think that I came up with that label.
Well, I'm sure Ken Burns appreciates it because I'm sure they had to license that. His name for
I don't,
that.
You yeah. know, I don't know because really Ken Burns has nothing to do with that effect.
They're using his name.
Right, I know. And everybody knows what it means. Mm. But it's like, you know, I don't see any little trademark. I mean, he's not.
True.
That's the funny thing is that when I used it with Bruce, I just didn't. This panning and zooming, I just didn't know what to call it. And I had just seen that series. And I remember, you know, talking to people about how I could see he didn't have any footage of this or. You know, he would just use a picture and then just pan across it. And I said, that's a great idea to just have a documentary, just pan across everybody. And I don't know, you know, these things happen and, you know, things pop up in weird places. I don't know.
Speaking of things popping up in weird places, how did Woz.org come about?
Well, that was Woz, you know, put up a site. He wanted to have a server and everything when the internet started happening. And it was really just nothing but some text and, you know, not really anything there at all. And I told him, I go, man, you should really have a better website than that, you know. You're Woz. And he's like, well, I don't know, you know, I guess, you know. And I said, well, let me make a new site for you. So then I just designed a new site and just pretty much used the same content and just sort of put a shell around it. And it just kind of stayed like that for a while. And then... And then the movie Pirates of Silicon Valley came out. Did you guys see that?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, people started looking him up on the web, and they would email him, you know. And he would answer them, you know, answer the questions personally. And he'd CC me and a couple other people that he thought might be interested. And so I'd, you know, what happened between you and Jobs at Atari, you know, and he'd answer the question and he'd see, and I'd see him, and I kept thinking, boy, these are kind of interesting. I should start putting these on the website, you know. And
I'm sure people were asking the same questions over and over and over as well.
Yeah, they did start doing that, but a lot of them were asking questions about the movie, and so I just put a little section on there and, you know, said questions and answers, and as soon as I did that, it was like an explosion. It just, all these, you know, emails started coming in because people were like, you know, I would post it, Woz would answer, and I would post it, and people would see their stuff, and, you know, Woz is talking to me, you know, and literally, Woz and me would be up till like 3 in the morning. He'd be emailing me all these things he's writing, and he can write. I mean, he spends like half his day on email, and he insisted on answering every single one himself, and, I mean, we're talking a lot of emails, and after a while, a lot of them would come through webmaster, which was me, and I would send them to him. So if I saw the question repeated, I would just send people to the page it was on. So it was really
probably a good idea.
Yeah, because he would keep, you know, answering them, and, you know, it's kind of neat. You know, he's really I think if there were more you know, guys like Woz in the valley, in the Silicon Valley area here, it'd be a different valley. I mean, he's just a different kind of person. You know?
Do you think he sees himself in the same way that a lot of Apple enthusiasts see him? Do you think he realizes the pedestal a lot of people put him on, or do you think he doesn't even think in those terms?
I think he realizes that a lot of people look up to him, and that he feels responsible to them to try to do the right thing. He's certainly not an attention seeker. If you were in a big conference, and there's a couple guys, you know, that are, you know, setting out the table, and there's a couple CEOs walking in, Waz is just as likely to talk to the you know, the guys setting up as he is to the CEOs. As a matter of fact, he's probably more likely to talk to just normal people. you know, he doesn't really like, you know, he doesn't really like the whole formality about everything, and he's just a very personable person. A lot of times when we were working at Wheels of Zeus, there'd be meetings scheduled, and he would cancel the meeting. And then it was a really small building. There was only a few of us in his company. And I'd go in, and I'd see why. An eighth grader asked to interview him. And he was in his office with a couple eighth graders, and they were just interviewing him, you know, for their school paper. And one of them had a camera, and, you know, he's as likely to cancel a meeting to do that as anything. I mean, he just, you know, he's a really interesting guy.
So what was Wheels of Zeus? And I know that recently went under. What was the deal with that?
Well, it was a GPS startup, and Waz came up with the idea that it'd be kind of neat to create like a little tag that you could put on somebody that would track this person's movements and tell you when they were gone. Actually, his idea was to put it on his dogs because he didn't want his dogs running away. He had these three poodle type dogs. There's some name for them, but I don't know what they're called. But he had these three dogs, X, Y, and Z, and that's what he named them.
Oh, really? And, X, yeah. Y, and Z.
And they were, you know, they would run away, you know. And he wanted something he could put on them. And the whole idea behind Wheels of Zeus was to create a device that it didn't necessarily tell you exactly where the subject was at all times. It told you when the subject was where it wasn't supposed to be.
Oh, okay.
So that's what saved the battery. Like, if you look at a lot of devices that are just always reporting the location, they just burn out their batteries right away. So the idea behind this was to just, you know, have the device smart enough to know, to be able to read the GPS, and to not do anything if it's in an area that's considered okay. And so through the web, you're able to map out certain areas that it's okay for this thing to be in, and maybe certain areas that it's not okay to be in. And so you can obviously extend this functionality to, say, you had, you know, somebody who was under house arrest, you know, it would be perfect for them, you know, or some, you know, it would be something that would be secured onto them, or maybe they're not supposed to go by a schoolyard or something, and, you know, if they go into it, the warning goes off. So it's, you know, it was a really neat idea, and it's not hard to understand. It's not hard to understand what it's doing, and the approach was unique. It's just that I don't think people are really that interested in this right now. Waz's idea was to make it really inexpensive so that anybody can buy it, which is sort of always his idea. Just, you know, make something that's cheap that people can just go out and get, and it's not some huge thing for rich people. You know, it's just, you know, that's what he wanted to do when he built the computer, is he wanted something that everybody could have, not, you know, just some corporation. So it's kind of the same approach he took with this. And, you know, after four years, I think it was, it just, you know, we ran out of money, and it was like, well, you know, I think that somebody bought the technology and they're hawking it right now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, sometimes an idea is just, it's not the right time. I mean, you look at, he also started a company called CL9 when he left Apple that did a programmable remote control.
Way ahead of its time.
Yeah, I mean, it's the 80s. He said, oh, you people are going to, you know, you're going to have all these things, and you're going to have a million remotes laying around, and wouldn't it be great to have one and just have it control everything? And so, not hard to understand. I understand it. You understand it. But it just wasn't, it was, you know, people just didn't really feel that it was something they needed. Of course, now you can buy these things at blister packs in Kmart, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But back then, it was just, you know, it was ahead of its time. And I think maybe this GPS thing, it could be in the same boat. I mean, it seems logical. You go to a movie, you watch Tom Cruise, and he's got a little thing on him, and he's jumping out of a helicopter, and somebody's on a computer watching him, you know, run around as a little dot. You know, you understand it, and you think it's neat, but, you know.
Tell him for his next idea. Excuse me. I'll give him this one for free. A GPS-enabled iPod with a laser pointer that you could play laser tag with.
Well, I think he'd totally be into the laser pointer idea.
Run around with your iPod, yeah. Shooting them with the laser pointer out of the end. You can track people on the screen with the GPS.
He's got so many laser pointers, it's unreal. I mean, he's got a blue one and a green one. You know, the ones that are the wavelengths that are kind of, you know, I think one cost him like $900 for this one. It's a special Blu-ray or something. And he really loves lasers.
Mm.
I don't know why.
So what's the future hold for AL? I mean, are we going to see any, I don't know, unicycle,
baton, flame baton twirling?
Anything like that? You have no idea what we're referring to, do you?
Well, I have a feeling I know, but I don't know how you could possibly know this.
I have to confess, I sent an email to Bruce G at G3.com saying, give us some dirt on Al. And he said, Al is a multi-talented person.
Yeah.
He is known to ride a unicycle and twirl a flaming baton wearing a grass skirt. In college, one of his jobs was an act in a Hawaiian show.
Yeah, I was a Samoan fire knife dancer.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was your job?
Yeah, that's how I worked my way through college, you know. It was really kind of an interesting sort of thing. I think there's a picture on the web of that. If you go to luckout.com/80s.
/80s.
Yeah, when I turned 35, I had an 80s birthday party.
No.
And there's under 1988, you see a picture of me. There's a little thing there doing the knife.
So, oh, yeah, you, gotcha.
Huh? Wow.
You know what's funny is that on my website, you know, I have this design firm and I do all this work for all these people and everything. When I look at my stats, the page that gets the biggest hit, it's this 80s page.
Well, you know, I can answer that, why that is.
It's the Tom Selleck mustache.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, actually, it's the whole idea of nostalgia.
Yeah.
I realize, you know, you're probably, how old am I? 30. I'm 36. Mm-hmm. And you're right around the same age, right? You're probably right, 38,
yep.
39?
40.
So it's our age group that is getting nostalgic for 20 years ago, the music that we grew up with, the movies that we watched. Because at MyMac.com, I'll see our search results, and it's 1988 music and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just linking to some blog that we had posted at one time. That's why you're getting those hits.
It's so weird, you know, because there's no links to this site. It was just like a personal site, but everybody's, you know, linking. I look at my stats, I'm like, what the heck is everybody looking at my 80s birthday party for, you know? But they do, and I have a whole list of things that you could wear, and I think maybe people are going to that, you know.
It's an interesting list, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And it started playing music, which scared me to death.
Yeah, that's
second
a
there.
Walk Like an Egyptian.
Is that what it was?
MIDI file, yeah.
Mm.
Excuse me. So what's going to happen in the future? What are you looking to do?
Well, what I end up seem to be doing a lot of work now is a lot of UI stuff. I'm kind of, a lot of it's for Windows, the Windows platform, because I'm working with companies that have products that run on Windows. And I have to have a Windows machine for this, but all the work that I'm doing is just totally taking it away from the whole Windows look. I mean, it's just, the Windows is just, it's just nauseating. I mean, everything you do, every time you look at any application, it just really looks like, is this all clip art or, you know,
yes.
Was this an accident or, you know, didn't they know what this is supposed to be, you know? But, so I've been trying to elevate some of the software that runs on there so that if it runs there and then it translates to the Mac, it'll still, you know, keep the same look and feel, you know. So I've been doing that, and since I'm completely on my own now with Wheels of Zeus no longer going, I've been spending more time with my kids. I have a little girl, it's like 4, and a little boy that's 10, ate his first crayon today. So, you know, I don't remember what color it was. But, yeah.
When it comes to teeth brushing time, you'll remember.
Yeah. So pretty much I've been just focusing on trying to keep work flowing through. There's some stuff I'm doing with Waz also. He's got a couple things in the queue that I can't really talk about, but they'll be neat.
The company he's running with Gilamelio?
No. That is... you know, that's sort of a, that's just a, sort of an investment situation.
Yeah.
Call a SPAC, I think.
Yep.
And
but we had Gil on the show a number of months ago and talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, he's doing it, but you know, SPACs have been around for a long time, but as soon as Woz does it, now all of a sudden they're all in the news, and you know, I don't understand. I told him, you know, the reason people want you involved is because the press follows you everywhere you go, you know.
Yeah, he's a popular culture figure. I mean, you know, his name itself, Woz. There's very few people in the world that you can have a three-letter name for, and you know exactly who it's referring to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't thought about that.
Well, he's Woz. Even Prince has five letters. Woz only has three.
Well, he had that symbol for a while.
Woz should get a symbol.
There you go.
Symbol.
He is quite an icon. I think one of the things that strikes me is he really likes Segways, and when we were at Wheels of Zeus, we all used to go out. He had like six of them, and we all used to go out on Segways for lunch. So here we are, you know, Woz and then me and my friend Jeff, and you know we're driving through the streets of Los Gatos, California, on Segways. You know, it's people are like waving, and it's an unusual sight to see a Segway, and it's an unusual sight to see three Segways in a row, and it's even more unusual when one of the guys on the Segways is Woz, you know. And you know, being in Silicon Valley, it's you know, he's pretty well known because you know he's given money to practically everybody. He's got a street named after him, you know, and he's just was really kind of a fun time, I think.
What's it like to ride a Segway? I've never ridden a Segway. Yeah, I've always wanted to. What's it like to ride one of those?
Oh, they're easy. You know, you get on them and just push forward, and they go, and you know, lean back, and they go back. And there's a little throttle on your right hand, and it's just really easy. You know, as soon as you're on it for you know 5 minutes, you're already zooming all over the place. So.
I so want to try. I've always wanted to buy one. I have. They're so expensive. There's just no way I could ever get away with buying one of those.
Bruce G has one.
Does he?
Yeah, yeah. He has one for driving around. I've never seen anything really bad happen. Well, I've seen one wipeout when we were at lunch. This guy Jeff that we're with, I don't know what happened. He's you know just as good as everybody, but he just for some reason, you know, Woz zooms by, I zoom by, and then I hear this crash and. I turn around and the Segway, the handle's broken, and my friend's on the ground, and his watch, his cell phone cracked, and you know he's bleeding, geez. And Woz ends, he has a first aid kit with him. go figure. He comes, it's like he's been just waiting to use his first aid kit. Runs over with a couple Band-Aids, and he had to go to the hospital, I think. But
wow,
yeah. Well, he plays hockey, so I think he's had a lot worse.
If he plays hockey, then he's not even going to tell anybody he happened on a Segway.
Yeah, it was wild though. I mean, that's the only thing. And we were pushing it. One of the first things Woz did was when he got a Segway, is he designed a little piece of hardware that would reprogram the keys to make them go faster.
Sounds about right.
The keys are like these little magnetic circles that you press on a disc. So he got one of the magnetic encoders, and he put it all together and did all this stuff. I don't know exactly what he did. And then he bought the blanks, and he just started encoding them to be able to control the limits on the Segway. You know, pretty much just to do it, you know.
Well, once an engineer, always an engineer, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He just hasn't stopped.
You know? So you've been using Macs for, 16 years now.
Yeah.
You're continuing to design and help startup companies, and if anybody wants to get a hold of you about, I don't know, potentially working with you, how would they do that?
Generally the Hawaiian Samoan Fire Knife Network is the way to go. But I'd say you could just go to my website, luckow.com.
That's luckow.com.
We'll have the link in the show notes.
Yep.
And I'd like to thank you, Al, for being on the show. And hopefully we can have you on again.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another speedy review from Robert at MyMac.com. If you're looking for a good cassette adapter for your iPod, to play in your car stereo, don't look to Monster's iCarPlay. For playing music, the sound quality was adequate, but the quality is really subpar. I burned out 2 units in less than 2 weeks. Neither my car or my wife's car liked the taste of the iCarPlay. After less than 100 hours of play, the cassette decks would just continually spit them out and stop playing music. So that's one big thumbs down for Monster's iCarPlay. I don't recommend it. Thanks for listening. This has been Robert from MyMac.com with another speedy review. Take it away, Tim.
And thank you, Robert, for an honest review of the iCarPlay cassette adapter.
Yeah, I've got the Monster Cable iCarPlay FM transmitter. I've been using that for several months, and I've been pretty happy with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the folks that make it will hear his review and make a better one.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole point of a negative review, is to not just warn potential customers away from a certain product that a product reviewer feels is either substandard or not up to par,
mm-hmm.
but it's for the manufacturer to know what the buying public thinks,
yep.
and to make a better product down the line.
That's right.
And that, honestly, is one of the main concerns for us. Our first concern is the reader on the website or the listener of the podcast. Hey, don't spend your money on this one.
Yep.
It's really not that great. But it's also to let the manufacturer know, look, we care enough about your product to review it, to use it, but here's the problems you might want to address in the future, and if mm-hmm. you do, we'll come back and give you a positive review, and you'll sell more units in the future.
Right.
Last week, we had a contest winner for our Microsoft, what was that, the keyboard, the mouse, Office 2004.
Yep.
It was Microsoft really came through and provided $500 worth of prizes.
Yeah.
And our winner was Rich Lefko.
Yep. And we left a message for Rich and didn't hear back.
Because he wasn't home when, you know.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, he called about an hour after we wrapped the show, and I was actually uploading it via FTP, so
yeah.
it was way too late. But I got the phone call from him. He called my cell phone back, and we ended up talking for darn near 20-30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Real nice guy, very deserving of winning the prize, so I was happy.
Good
of course,
deal.
You know, everybody who's won something that we've actually talked to, after we're talking to them, we're like, I'm so glad that person won.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
so glad that person won, because it's always someone deserving.
Yep.
So I think that says something about not just our listeners, but Mac users in general.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice talking to Rich. Congratulations officially again, Rich, and thank you to Microsoft. You know, Rich is a big Mac user.
Uh-huh.
And he's done some writing in the past. And I think he's probably got some writing ability and writing talent. And I encouraged him to send something to MyMac.com for possible publication in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So here's one of our contest winners might actually become a contributor at MyMac.com.
Oh, fancy that.
Yeah, imagine that. Never heard of that happening before. But, you know, it's strange how things come about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there you go.
Well, hopefully we'll see something from him then.
Yeah. You know, my PS2 died, my PlayStation 2?
Yeah.
It died. I was so bummed out. For at least a year, I had stopped playing the PlayStation 2 pretty much altogether.
Mm-hmm.
About a month ago, I got back into it. I was very excited to, all right, I'm going to play this game.
Yeah.
I was, really what made me stop playing, I was playing Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And I got to this one, I don't even remember what it was now, but I got to one mission, and I couldn't get past it.
Mm.
So I just stopped playing it, you know.
Yeah.
I got back to it about a month ago, and I beat that level, finally.
Mm.
I was so happy. And so I started progressing farther in the game, and I got back into it, you know. So here's this $50 that I spent probably a year and a half ago for this game. I'm finally getting my money's worth. I'm playing this game. Boom. Day before Father's Day, my PS2 dies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just dead. Turn it on, hit the... It would light up, but I can hear that the disc wasn't spinning. It wouldn't eject my disc, it wouldn't do anything. So I searched online, found exactly what my symptoms were. My PS2 is dead.
Oh, really? So there's just basically dead. Nothing there's, you can do.
You might be able to get it fixed, but...
How much is it going to cost
right.
to fix a $129 unit?
Exactly. Yeah. But it's got my game in it, so
yeah.
I had to take it apart. And once you do, it voids the warranty.
Right.
But, I mean, I've had the PS2 for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
There is no warranty anymore. So I took it apart and got my game out of it, and I was kind of bummed because, realistically, it's like, I don't really want to spend money on another PS2 when I know the PS3 is coming out in November.
Right.
Besides which, I haven't even got an Xbox 360 yet, let alone going back and paying money on an older game system. But man, I really wanted to get back to my games. And I've got all, as you know, Chad, Grand Theft Auto is my favorite games. Not
of
because
all
time. Of the violence and all that. I just really like the
cityscape. Whole sandbox format.
Yeah, just kind of running around and doing, getting in cars, listening to the radio, driving. It's just it's fantastic. But I've got it all. I've got those all for the PS2. I don't have them for my Xbox, and I don't want to get them for the Xbox because then I have to start each game from scratch.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. So I was, I pretty much came to the conclusion that I'm going to have to buy another PS2. Then. I have a credit card for a certain company that I'm not going to say who.
Okay.
They don't pay us for advertising, so I'm not going to give them the props that they deserve for this.
Very well, then.
I get an email from this company, which I usually delete. It's for their preferred customers.
Yeah.
But I just, before I deleted it, I saw that it said something about PlayStation 2. And I went, oh, what the heck is that? Because it's on my mind. And it was a really great deal. The deal was, buy an Xbox 360 Premium, that's the $399 one, get a game, a Xbox 360 game, and a PlayStation 2 game console, the slim one, free.
Holy crap, that's
plus a great deal. Free shipping.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
And it was only going to cost me an extra $2 a month of what I'm already paying for that credit card now. And I went, so I thought about it for all of 4.5 seconds and ordered it. I got it already. I got my Xbox 360. It's the premium one. It's the one with the hard drive and all that.
Yeah.
I really need the wireless adapter thing for it, which is another $100, so I'm not worried about it right now.
Yep.
I got the PS2, the replacement. The memory card works in it great, so all my saved games are still there.
Sweet.
It was a happy ending. But man, I tell you what. I had the original PlayStation 2, which is pretty big. The new PlayStation is the tiniest little thing. I cannot believe.
Like a PlayStation 2 Mini?
Yes, exactly. it's basically the difference between a laptop computer and an iPod Nano. I mean, I showed my wife and she went, does it actually play the games the other one did? And I said, yeah. And this one has a built-in Ethernet port where the other one was an add-on, a brick that went on the back to add it on. She went, why is it so much smaller? I said, it's 4 years worth of technological innovation.
Yeah.
You can fit it in a much smaller design.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it was so small. that was my fun story. But I saw something that happened today that I just wanted to share. It has nothing to do with Max. And I actually wrote it down so I didn't forget. I saw two birds today on the bird feeder by my window, right? I've got it hanging down by my window, so when I'm sitting there, I can look out and see this bird feeder.
So is this the part that makes this an entertainment podcast?
Yes, this is the entertainment part.
Okay.
One bird was slightly larger than the other. I think they're sparrows, but I don't know. I'm not a bird kind of guy. I just put bird food in it and watch the birds flutter around. But it was really cool because the larger of the two birds that were up there was picking up the seeds from the bird feeder. Now, this bird feeder is full, right?
Yeah.
It's picking up the seeds and gently putting it in the mouth of the other bird.
Oh, that's cool.
I was sitting there watching it going, that's so cool. So, to end the podcast on that note, Chad, I'm going to pick up the mouse and put it in your mouth. And that will be symbolically the close of the podcast. See y'all next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.